This is a unique morning. John rarely lets me get up in front of the microphone because it can really get out of hand. But he's given me a few minutes this morning because I just want to give you a little tidbit of a history on why in the world we got connected with Cornerstone here in Maine when the ministry that John and I represent is located in Wisconsin. There's a few miles in between there. Well, my dad was born in 1914 in Palmyra, Maine. He lived in Maine, married my mom. They transplanted to New York State, where I was born, and my four other siblings. Then from then, they retired and went to New Mexico, where they helped some missionaries out there until my mother contracted cancer. They came back out to New Jersey, where we were ministering, and she passed away and went to be with the Lord back in 1986. Well, my dad decided that he wanted to go back to New Mexico. So off he went. We moved him back to New Mexico, and he worked out there again for a few more years, volunteering and helping the ministry there. Well, he came to our house in 1998 at 85 years old to celebrate his birthday, and he said, "I think I'd like to go back to Palmyra, Maine." We're going, "Oh, no, Dad, really? Do we have to move you again across the country?" So we did. My brother was living at that time. He had transplanted from California to Palmyra as well. So my dad found a little place right down the road, and he lived there starting in February of 99. Of course, we chose February, a month to move to Maine. I don't know who was thinking what on that. Well, my dad wandered in the wilderness of looking for a church home for a couple years until he came to the promised land of Cornerstone up here. And we started hearing about this church. Oh, the people. Oh, the family of God up there. Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah, okay, well, we'll come and check it out with you one of these days, Dad. Well, we did, and I think our relationship began here with you folks in probably 2004. And we came on a Sunday night, and we were so blessed. And I saw people loving on my father. Now, there's not much more you can do to warm a daughter's heart than to love on her dad. And you did that well. And you did that for several years. In 2007, my brother Gary passed away suddenly from a stroke, and we needed to move Dad. So my poor dad moved from Maine to Florida in about 2 weeks' time when we told him what the plan was going to be near my brother in Florida. So from 2007... he was in another wilderness, kind of, in an assisted living, wonderful care, but he never did find that church home once again. But he was receiving calls and letters. After a while, he couldn't hear, so it had to be just letters. But we thank you for those of you who kept in touch with him and kept a connection from his place of wonderful memories here at Cornerstone. He went to breakfast in August 20th of 2011, which was one of his favorite meals, except that Dad really liked any meal, if you knew him. He liked to eat. He went to breakfast, went back to his room, took a nap, and he went to heaven. Amen. And I'm so thankful, and I want to just express my personal thanks to you folks for how often you have prayed for him during that time. We thank you for your interest in our family, and we thank you for having us here almost every year since 2004. God bless you and thank you so much. Now, John, it's your turn.
Yeah.
If you don't applause when I'm done, I'll be really disappointed. No, I will understand. You just heard from the better half. So that is the explanation as to how a ministry that is located in Union Grove, Wisconsin, about an hour north of Chicago, wound up being represented and supported by this church for a number of years. It all had to do with Clement Weeks, and so we are just grateful for the relationship that we've enjoyed with this church over the years. It's been wonderful. You folks have been wonderfully generous to this ministry, to individuals with intellectual disabilities and special needs. We are in transition. Since we were here last year, we sold our home in eastern Pennsylvania. We moved. We're kind of renting an apartment in the Scranton, Pennsylvania area, looking for a home. Here I am in July, in transition. Right after I celebrated my 70th birthday, and here's my kids. They came from all over the country to be with me for my 70th. And so there's another transition in that this is probably the last time that I'll be representing shepherds here at Cornerstone. I'm scheduled to retire at the end of July or June of this coming year. And so this may wind it up for our time of official visits, but I have a notion that we will be back from time to time just to drop in and check on your pastor, making sure he's behaving himself, which is quite a task. But here's our Shepherd's Campus, and this is not too much has changed over the last few years. We built a few new buildings for Shepherd's College, but here's the campus. And we are still in the business of honoring God by valuing people. Last year, I showed you this slide as one of our priority needs. We had two HVAC units that were big units on top of our all-purpose building, our gymnasium, and they were on the verge of collapsing. And so this church graciously provided one of those units for us at a cost of about $15,000. Here's the crane hoisting the unit in place. A little closer look, and there's a guy, he is very strong, doing a press of that multi-ton HVAC unit. We just want to say thank you for your generosity. It was a wonderful help to us. We actually have one more to put in, so... But Shepherd's is in transition, folks. Years ago, the very first media that I showed was called The Best Is Yet to Come. And little did I know how good Shepherd's would become in reaching young adults with special needs and evangelizing them. It was in the early days that we were called Shepherd's Home and School, a ministry to elementary age children, and began in 64. Then the culture changed. And children are not being institutionalized. They're being mainstreamed in the school, and shepherds need to make an adjustment to accommodate that. So in 1996, there was a challenge before us, and we had to make a transition. And so Shepherd's Home and School was discontinued in favor of a adult residential program. Exactly 22 years fast forward now, and we come to Shepherd's College. In 2008, we began Shepherd's College. We began to realize that we had an aging population and that we needed to minister to young adults with special needs. Again, the climate changed. Everything, group homes were in, institutions were out. Adults were not coming to institutional settings. Parents could not get funding from the government for institutional settings. So Shepherd's College was formed as a three-year program for young adults with special needs, and God has wonderfully blessed that program. It has provided hope for so many families. I'll show you a video on that in just a moment. But in addition to Shepherd's College, we have a Catalyst program, an off-campus program, where those with special needs live off-campus in community housing. They get assistance from Shepherd's. And a number of college graduates from Shepherd's College has become part of our Catalyst program, our independent living program. We also have a respite care program for individuals that come and can spend 2 weeks or 2 months at Shepherd's to give mom and dad a caregiver break. We have summer programs. We have a college for a week, a couple of weeks of that, to give prospective students an introduction of what it would be like to be a part of Shepherd's College. We participate in the Special Olympics. There's all kinds of things going on. Many people say, is there Shepherd's anywhere else in the country? No, we only have one campus in Union Grove, Wisconsin. But we, in a response to that cry, we have started an online presence where we have a multitude of resources at shepherdsresources.org for educators, for families, for church leaders, where they can get some assistance and coaching and training and dealing with individuals with intellectual disabilities. You can Google it, it'll come right up. So we have these seven programs going at Shepherd's now. You can see what they are. There is a variety of things, but you do need to know that as Shepherd's College has become the focus of Shepherd's, the long-term residential program has become financially unsustainable. As of June 2018, we are winding down the residential program. The focus is going to be Shepherd's College, Shepherd's Academy, the Respite Care Program, Shepherd's Enterprises, Shepherd's Academy, and these other ministries that are really touching needs and providing hope for so many families. As you think about Shepherd's, folks, we do not receive any direct government assistance. Yes, individuals may receive some state funding for their education. They may receive help through the government, through the family. We are not the direct recipient of any funds. Therefore, we hire only born-again staff. We have an evangelistic emphasis, a strong Bible emphasis in our curriculum, a close relationship with local churches. And it is, God has wonderfully blessed this stance over the years, and it's been churches like this that have so generously supported Shepherds that have allowed us to maintain that Christ-centered biblical focus without surrendering to government control. And we are thankful for that. So here's about 5 minutes just to give you kind of a drone's eye view of Shepherd's College.
Hi, and welcome to Shepherd's College. Shepherd's College is a three-year post-secondary school that exists to educate and train students with intellectual or developmental disabilities by equipping them in vocational, social, and life skills while inspiring a lasting awareness of God's plan for their lives. This is the Finley Center. It's the first building on campus, and it's where our business, human resources, marketing, and foundation offices are located. On the second floor, we have four hotel-style suites available for families and guests who visit our campus free of charge. Suites are reserved on a first-come, first-served basis. It's going to help them save at least probably $100 to $300 depending on how long their stay is. So it's a really nice thing to be able to offer. Along with our technology, horticulture, and culinary arts labs, Shepherd's College has a variety of classrooms. Teachers use the real teaching and learning strategy that helps students learn relationally and experientially in their preferred learning style. They can see how the information being taught can be applied to their life now and after Shepherd's College. Shepherd's College Greenhouse and Horticulture Lab provides students with hands-on and classroom experience. The greenhouse opens seasonally to the public, providing students with opportunities to design custom-made planters as well as develop their customer service and money skills. Shepherd's College Culinary Arts Lab and Commercial Kitchen gives students hands-on and classroom experience as they pursue careers in culinary arts.
I absolutely love culinary a lot.
And then the top mixture was a crumble, which has like cinnamon sugar, brown sugar, flour, black butter, and drifting stuff. It looks really good.
In the lab, students focus on specific skill development, while the commercial kitchen provides them with marketable industry experience. Shepherd's College Technology Program offers students hands-on and classroom experience as they pursue careers in technology. Topics of training include professional office skills, programming, coding, networking, repairs, and mass media.
I love computers, learning how to build and troubleshoot.
The dorms are the most structured and supported residential environments on campus, allowing first-year students to transition successfully from home to college. The first phase of the residential progression at Shepherd's College is in the Wood Center. We provide housing for our female students in the north dorms and separate male student dorms to the south. In each wing, students share dorm-style rooms, a common kitchen, dining area, laundry room, and a community living space. The second phase in the residential progression at Shepherd's College is Homes A and B. Home A provides housing for 8 women and Home B for 8 men. The homes provide the opportunity for increased independence as students are responsible to prepare meals, do their own laundry, and care for their rooms and common living areas. The Clark Apartments are the third and final phase of the residential progression at Shepherd's College. These two-person apartments give students a greater sense of independence as they prepare for life after graduation. In the Clark Apartments, students have a weekly grocery budget, plan and prepare their own meals, and shop for their own groceries.
Can we show you your apartment?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Additionally, students share responsibility in cleaning, laundry, and general apartment upkeep.
Like Friday, I think it's my year two.
Yeah.
So here's our student media center. provide some desktop computers or some iPads and a variety of other kind of resources that students can check out or use as they need to for projects or for leisure or recreation in the afternoons and evenings. Our dedicated advisors love their students and play a pivotal role in their journey towards appropriate independence. Advisors are also the primary point of contact for parents, and they communicate about how a student is doing throughout the course of the year, because we find it's really important that we work as a team, both with the families and the individual, towards student success. Home to the Soaring Eagles, the Bolt House Center is where the action is, including Special Olympics, chapel, graduation, and other special events. Appropriate Independence Academy, or what we call AI Academy, is a program for students who don't quite meet the academic criteria to be in the occupational programs at Shepherd's College. So we provide a unique program for them that focuses primarily on daily living skills, social skills, money skills, and then they get the Bible education portion as well. They stay in the dorms, a residential setting, just like all the other students. Monday through Friday, Shepherd's Table is the place to be for lunch. Food is prepared in Shepherd's Kitchen, right here on campus, where culinary students have an opportunity to learn and serve. We are fully recognized as a post-secondary program by the U.S. Department of Education. The accreditation opens up funding sources for students in the form of federal student aid, such as the Pell Grant, Student and Parent Plus loans, and federal work study. It also enables some students to receive additional funds through third-party scholarships, as well as vocational rehabilitation funding from certain states. If you'd like to know more, we invite you to join us in person. As always, please feel free to call or email us if we can help you further explore the possibility of attending Shepherd's College.
Here's our most recent graduating class. And now, I don't know what they told them on the next pose, but we see the same individuals. Maybe they said, think about the theological implications of evangelism and the sovereignty of God. And so here they are. Now, I'm not sure that's what they said to them, but they're thinking really hard. But this is an example of how families who have children that had no hope of going to college had opportunity to get some vocational training, discipleship, biblical training. I know of no other place in the country that has a Christ-centered program that is accredited as a non-degree granting institution to serve those specifically with intellectual disabilities. It is a unique ministry, and folks, we are reaching young adults through the college program more than we ever have in the 60 years of the life of Shepherd's. Another glitch in the program: on July 14th, we had 5 inches of rain overnight. There's a lot of blacktop around Shepherd's. We had a very serious flood. We are not near a river. We're not near a lake. We don't have flood insurance. And so there was a lot of damage. And so this is one of the projects, that one of the priorities that we are undertaking. We had to make repairs immediately. We had to borrow some designated funds, which we have to pay back, in order to make some immediate repairs. I mean, you know what it is in a flood. You've got to remove drywall. You've got to remove insulation. You've got to do all this stuff. Do air testing. Make sure mold is not developing. And nearly every building sustained some damage. One of our buildings, the basement, was full to the ceiling. And so we have $225,000 worth of damage, in addition to a small amount that insurance is going to cover, some homeowners insurance. Praise the Lord. 130 to 135 has already come in through an appeal that we've made to various, maybe some of you may have received that appeal by mail, but we're working on that right now. And so if the Lord prompts you to do something, we would be delighted. Just send a check to Shepherd's, label it Flood Fund, and they'll know where to put it, and they will designate it specifically. As I was sharing with Pastor Stan as we were having dinner the other night, about the flood, he says, you know, doesn't it make you wonder why God would allow that? What purpose could there be in that? I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure anybody does. Just as the people in Houston or the Florida Keys or Fort Myers or Jacksonville whose homes were destroyed and their lives were disrupted, how do we think about it? Or the families that come to Shepherd's for a prospective student weekend, not imagining in their wildest expectations when mom was pregnant that they would someday be in a college setting for students with special needs. I mean, it's disrupting to the families. It's not what they planned. In fact, I've made a few observations during these 14 years that I've been with Shepherds. Here they are, real quickly. Number one, disability requires an extra measure of patience and time and trust and hope. And I believe Shepherd's College has been the greatest ministry that Shepherd's has had that gives hope to families. Number two, disability is unpredictable. It might come through birth of a child. It might come instantly through a tragic accident, as some of our residents have experienced, or it may develop slowly, caused by a disease that breaks in gradually. I was next to a young man in a wheelchair, severely handicapped, was not even verbal anymore. He was playing in the backyard and apparently touched something, some animal feces or something, caught a bacteria, and gradually became totally disabled. And it changes life. It is not what parents plan. Number three, families are often overwhelmed by various medical and caregiving and educational responsibilities. Homes get out of balance, and 4 out of 5 where there are profound disabilities, 4 out of 5 families end in divorce. Where there is a profound disability of a child, mom and dad seldom ever attend church together. I think a church family can help that, can help solve that. Number five, the most difficult are those disabilities invisible to the naked eye. You saw some students in this video, and you would say, why are they at Shepherd's? Look, they can speak, they can talk, they look normal. You spend just a few minutes with them and you will understand, you will see the disability. And the invisible disabilities are the ones that are most difficult for these students to handle. Number six, parents become exhausted emotionally. Some do. Just thinking about what might have been, but never will be. So they face a choice. Just as the people in Fort Myers or Houston or Shepherd's when we had the flood, will we accept who God is and how he works? Bruce Carroll writes a song called Sometimes Miracles Hide. And in that song, there is the phrase, we may have to wait a lifetime to see the reason with our eyes, but we know sometimes miracles hide. So excited, it was coming to be. Two people so in love, now soon there would be three. For many years they planned it, now it would soon be true. She was picking out the pink clothes, he was looking at the blue. The call came unexpected. The doctor had bad news. Some tests came back and things weren't right. He said, you're gonna have to choose. I'll wait a week for your decision. And the words cut like a knife. I'm sure everyone will understand. If you want to end its life. They were badly shaken. They just had no choice. They knew God creates no accidents, and they were sure they heard his voice saying, sometimes miracles hide, and God will wrap some blessings in disguise. And you may have to wait this lifetime to see the reasons with your eyes.
'cause sometimes miracles hide. It seemed before they knew it, the appointed day arrived. With eager apprehension, they could barely hold inside. The first time they laid eyes on her confirmed the doctor's fears, but they held on to God's promise. They were sure they both could hear. Sometimes miracles hide, and God will wrap some blessings in disguise. And you may have to wait this lifetime to see the reasons with your cause sometimes miracles hide. Though she was not like the other girls, they thought she was the best. And through all the years of struggle, neither whispered one regret. The first day that she started school, took her first bus ride, they remembered the words that God had spoke, and they both broke down and cried. I see to them it did not matter why some things in life take place. They just knew the joy they felt when they looked into her face. They learned sometimes miracles hide. They said God has wrapped our blessing in disguise, and we may have to wait this lifetime to see the reasons with our eyes. 'Cause sometimes miracles hide. We've learned sometimes miracles.
Well, it's not just about disability or those devastated by hurricanes, or what about your disappointment? What about your discouragements? What about the things you're dealing with right now? Maybe you need a fresh perspective on life when things get messy. And I'd like to just suggest three anchors today in the few minutes that remain here. Three biblical anchors for stormy days. Here we go. All right, and here they are. I'm going to give them to you right now, real quick. In fact, I could probably read them, sing a song, be done, and that's maybe what I should do. Maybe I'll put a little more meat on some of those bones. But there's what I want you to remember today, folks. Great is God's faithfulness. Let's read it together. Great is God's faithfulness. Kind are God's ways, and sufficient is God's grace. In Lamentations 3:21-25, it's probably one of the most common passages that we read with regards to God's faithfulness. And it's interesting that Lamentations is written, did I say Psalms? It's Lamentations 3, 21 to 25. And it's interesting that it is written at a time when the prophet and the people of Judah are experiencing extreme destruction from the Babylonian army, greater than Hurricane Irma. The worship of Judah was in ruins, and it was immediately after the crumbling of Jerusalem and the temple by the Babylonian army that this was written in 586 BC. It was a dark moment for the people of God. And the prophet is pondering his bitter afflictions and this situation, and he says, my soul hath them still in... Well, let me back up. Verse 19, remembering my afflictions and my misery, the wormwood and the gall, my soul has them in remembrance, and it humbled me. This I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope. Why does he have hope? Because he realized that God comes close to those who are afflicted and those who are humbled. And it is the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because of his compassions they fail not, or his steadfast love. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. In your hymn book, when you read Great is Thy Faithfulness or sing it, you'll probably see a note somewhere near the hymn that is taken from Galatians 3:23. And when he says they are new every morning, he says your steadfast love, your refreshment, the Lord's mercies, or the realization of his steadfast love is new every morning. And I think he's really hearkening back to the days in Israel when they were in the wilderness and they got manna every morning provided by God. And he sustained them with that manna. And he's saying, just as God was faithful in providing that manna for the children of Israel, he's faithful in providing new mercies every day for us in the midst of our difficulty. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. And then he goes on to kind of... give acceptance of God's sovereignty. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. Now listen, God's faithfulness is not judged on our satisfaction with the circumstances, is it? Or the outcomes that we're hoping for when difficult things happen. And I think there's one of three options that often we wind up concluding. Number one, God is good but not powerful. Do you suppose there were some that thought that as Irma churned through Florida? Rabbi Kushner years ago wrote a book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, and his conclusion is God cares and he would change things if he were able. What a hopeless theology that is. In fact, R.C. Sproul, some of you may hear him on the radio, is a great Bible teacher. He says, there is precious little sovereignty left in many people's idea of God's sovereignty. That is true, and that certainly is true of the conclusion of Kushner. The second option is God is powerful, but he doesn't care. Well, that's equally hopeless. But I believe the biblical viewpoint is God is both powerful and good. God cares and could change things if he so wished. So what do? When prayers for relief or protection or healing are not answered, I believe it's because there is a larger purpose for his creation and for his children as individuals. So how would I answer Pastor Stanley? He says, why would God allow this as shepherds, this flood? What purpose could that be? I don't know. But I do believe that God has a larger purpose. Whether it be at shepherds, whether it be in Florida, whether it be in Houston, or whether it be in your life situation. And it's not seemingly getting fixed on your terms. God has a larger purpose. You know, to parents who have faced the blessing and challenge of raising a child with special needs, I have observed this. One family said to me, we have learned to turn our attention from a performance-centered life to a relationship-centered life. You understand what they're saying? It's not how well he plays t-ball or flag football. We've turned our attention from a performance-centered life to a relationship-centered life. It is a far richer way to live. Great is God's faithfulness. Kind are God's ways. Psalm 63. David's in the wilderness. He's exiled from his home. I mean, he's in a desperate situation. He's been being hunted by King Solomon. And in Psalm 63, he writes, O God, thou art my God, early will I seek thee. My soul thirsts for thee, my flesh longs for thee, in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. Why does he say that? He's in the desert. He's in a dry place. And he says, oh, to see thy power and thy glory, so I have seen thee in the sanctuary, because thy loving kindness is better than life. So he takes action. My lips shall praise thee. Thus I will bless thee while I live. I will lift up my hands in thy name. Kind are God's ways. And David is embracing that truth in the midst of being exiled in the desert. And he chooses to think about the kindness of God and responds to him with uplifted hands and a raised voice. Aaron Keyes wrote a song about 3 years ago called Sovereign Over Us. And he says in that song, you are wisdom unimagined. Who could understand your ways? Reigning high above the heavens, reaching down in endless grace, you're the lifter of the lowly, compassionate and kind. You surround and you uphold me, and your promises are my delight. Boy, I see that in David, in Psalm 63 right here. You know, I think sometimes we see God's kindness best against a contrasting background. You know, when I put PowerPoint together, I usually look and see. Now, can you see the words? Is the background right for you to be able to see the words? It can't be too busy. It can't be too light or dark, or you won't see the letters. I think it's interesting that when Jeremiah wrote Lamentations, he saw God's loving kindness in the background of the manna from heaven that was given to them while they were wandering in the desert. And he was reminded of that in the midst of his lament over the destruction of Jerusalem. And there he saw God's loving kindness and steadfast love. Wow. There was a family of a severely disabled daughter named Jessica. They received this letter from a friend by the name of Helen. And Helen says, I saw more clearly God's loving kindness and my security in Christ against the background of disability. Helen wrote, says, as a daughter of the king, I am worth beyond my capacity to perform. And I thought of Jessica. She is loved by your family, given a worth beyond her capacity to perform. And her place in your home is ensured by your love for her, not by her ability to be loving or helpful or to achieve anything. I am just like her in God's family. I am far more handicapped spiritually in the spiritual realm while thinking that I am strong and competent. Still, God loves me. And God used Jessica to help me understand who I really am. God's kindness, I think, sometimes is seen against the background of potential tragedy, like Irma. Jackie's best friend, Sue, who is a school teacher in Bradenton, Florida, I think saw God's kindness against the background of the impending destruction of Irma. They decided to ride out the storm in their home in Bradenton. It's not right on the beach. It's inland in the city, not far from the ocean. And she posted this on Facebook about 18 hours before Irma was to hit. She says, we're all buttoned up, just came from a neighborhood gathering. Our neighbor is a worship pastor and his father is a retired pastor. That works, huh? Wonderful singing, prayer, and praise. We dedicated ourselves and our property to the Lord. It was powerful. His father shared the words to a song. God can still the storm, but sometimes he stills the child. Kind are God's ways, and sufficient is God's grace. Probably the most popular verse that you think of as it relates to the sufficiency of grace is what Jesus said to Paul in response to Paul's request for the Lord to lift the burden of the thorn in the flesh that Paul was experiencing. In fact, Paul said, this thorn is as though Satan is buffeting me. Lord, would you take it away? And God says to him, my grace is sufficient for thee, Paul, for my strength is made perfect in your weakness. And so Paul concludes, I will glory in my infirmity, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. When I am weak, then I am strong. God's grace is sufficient. You know, we live in a self-help, can-do mindset as Americans. And I think we need to come to grips with the fact that we are strong only when our weaknesses are made, are wedded with God's grace. And I don't know of any more powerful illustration and reminder that we have than to rub shoulders with those who face the challenge of disability and realize that they are not the problems. They are not the problem. They are merely a mirror to remind us of our own weakness. And I hope it does that. That's why I think it's good for people, for individuals, particularly those who are regarded as competent and capable, to be somehow involved, whether it be by prayer, by volunteer, by financial support, with a ministry to those with special needs, because it reminds us of how weak we are and how dependent on grace we are. But I don't know of any greater example of the mystery and sovereignty of the grace of God than what we see accomplished in the cross of Christ. I mean, that is where sinners like you and I are made fit for heaven. Now think about it. The cross was not an accident. It was not God's attempt to salvage a plan that was God that had gone bad. It was not God's plan B. We read in Acts 2, 23 and 24, this Jesus was delivered up according to the definite plan and foreknowledge of God, whom you crucified and killed by the hands of lawless men. But God raised him up, loosening the pangs of death. And in that moment, death and Satan were defeated. Redemption was completed. Folks, this is the supreme demonstration of the sovereignty of God and his larger purpose in life. And it should be an immeasurable source of comfort for us when our lives get disrupted by the minor things. You know, the disciples, they were in despair when Christ was crucified. They thought all hope was lost, and it was only after the resurrection that they saw God's larger purpose and understood the work of redemption. The quote from Johnny Erickson Tada, I probably will never forget. I probably would have never discovered it had I not been associated with shepherds. But she says, no trial, no disease, no illness, no accident or injury reaches us apart from God's permission. Even if a cripple is healed or an intellectual disability is cured, it is only temporary. Life is short. Meanwhile, in the short term, Johnny says, God sometimes permits what he hates to accomplish what he loves. Do you believe God loved the cross? I believe God hated the cross, but he loves the sinner. And in his large, magnificent plan, he redeemed you and I. So to the unbeliever, I say this morning. God has set a plan in place by his sovereign design to invite you into the kingdom, to be a child of God. And you say, oh no, I think I'm too far gone. I will tell you, his grace is sufficient. You cannot out-sin God's grace. But you must receive the gift. And if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you are part of that large plan of God. What about believers today? As I look at God's faithfulness, God's kindness, the sufficiency of God's grace, I can say you could trust God in the disruptions of life. It takes patience. It takes time. It takes trust. It takes hope, but he always has a purpose. So what do we do? How do we think about it? I don't think it's just passive resignation. Oh, God is sovereign. Woe is me. I think we need to do what David did and take action and think creatively about things. I saw Max Licato interviewed recently and advertising his book, Anxious for Nothing, a setting of Philippians 4:6. It says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God. The peace of God will pass all understanding. Will guard your hearts, your minds in Christ Jesus. And he gives an acrostic, and I leave it with you. C-A-L-M, calm. C, celebrate God. As David did in the wilderness in Psalm 63. A, ask specifically. Ask specifically. L, leave it with the Lord. Don't try to manipulate. Don't try to make it happen yourself. Leave it with the Lord. M, meditate on positive truth. What's that mean? I think this is a good start. Great is your faithfulness. Kind are your ways. Sufficient is thy grace, and express a thankful spirit. So how does it translate into my life? I love what Scotty Smith said in his book, Everyday Prayers. This book has been a blessing to me. I recommend it to you. Everyday Prayers, Scotty Smith. A prayer for wrestling with the sovereignty of God. And Scotty Smith writes on September 23rd, which happens to be my daughter Emily's birthday. I wish she was married. I pray about that. God hasn't seen fit to see it happen yet. And he says, so Father, as much as I find comfort seen in Jesus' cross, why do I struggle with your working anywhere else? Why do I want to reverse roles and make me the potter and treat you like malleable clay? Why do I prefer at times to have a Play-Doh God instead of a sovereign Father? I don't have any problems with you setting up and sitting down presidents and premiers, but when it comes to things that are limiting and inconvenient to my life, I often question your goodness. Free me from such foolishness. You are always at work for your good and for our good and your glory. He is sovereign over us. Let me close with this song.
There is strength within the sorrow. There is beauty in our tears. And you meet us in our mourning with a love that casts out fear. You are working in our waiting. You're sanctifying us. When beyond our understanding, you're teaching us to trust. Your plans are still to prosper. You have not forgotten us. You're with us in the fire and the flood. You're faithful forever, perfect in love. You are sovereign over us. You are wisdom unimagined. Who could understand your ways? Reigning high above the heavens, reaching down in endless grace. You're the lifter of the lowly, compassionate and kind. surround and you uphold me. And your promises are my delight. Your plans are still to prosper. You have not forgotten us. You're with us in the fire and the flood. You're faithful forever, perfect in love. You are sovereign over us. Even what the enemy means for evil, you turn it for our good. You turn it for our good and for your glory. Even in the valley, you are faithful. You're working for our good. You're working for our good and for your glory. Even what the enemy means for evil, you're working for our good. You're working for our good and for your glory. Even in the valley, you are faithful. Perfect in love, you are sovereign.